Still no audio for me. However, colleagues, I encourage you to start and I'll work with staff to try to debug it.
Can you hear me, Commissioner Mapps? Yeah. Commissioner Rubio.
I can hear you. I can't hear people on the dais.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. And Commissioner Mapps, you can still not hear me, correct? That is correct. Okay. So something is wrong with Commissioner Mapps' sound. Could I suggest, could you have him log off and log back on and make sure he taps on the audio thing?
I can hear you now.
Oh, good. Ta-da. All right. So,
da-da-da-da-da. Headphones. It's not working, the headphones today, but we can proceed.
All right, good. I have a pre-gavel. May I proceed with that at this point? Very good. Colleagues, I want to take a moment to remember Joyce Nelson, a community leader who passed away on February 4th of 2021. A memorial was held just last Saturday to honor Joyce, but it feels appropriate to make space to acknowledge her here as well. Joyce was a Native elder, a service-focused leader, and a devoted family member and friend. Originally from Montana, Joyce lived in Portland for over 70 years and was well known for her tireless commitment to the Portland Native community. Along with her husband, Buzz, Joyce launched several community-based organizations that still operate today, including Portland American Indian Center, the Native American Youth Association, Concerned Indian Community, Portland American Indian Elders, and Native American Rehabilitation Association. In 2006, Joyce received the Spirit of Portland Award for her advocacy and collaboration within the Native community. She fought diligently for housing, jobs, addiction treatment, and education for urban Native Americans. She was a highly engaged community member, working for and later serving on the board of the Native American Rehabilitation Association, as well as the Portland Youth and Elders Committee, and was instrumental in the founding of NEA High School. Joyce's dedication and hard work will not be forgotten. Our community is forever grateful for the lasting positive impacts Joyce brought to the community. Thank you, Joyce, and we wish her family and her friends all of the best. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Mapps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before City Council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or first readings of ordinances. Written testimony must be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it very much. Colleagues, we have one item for this afternoon. It is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance, item number 926.
Adopt South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines as district-specific historic resource review approval criteria and repeal the Lair Hill Historic Conservation District Design Guidelines.
Colleagues, this is a hearing of the Portland City Council. Today's date is November 2nd, 2022. The subject of today's hearing is the South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines. There will not be a vote on this today. We'll have a staff presentation and an opportunity for council to ask questions. Then we'll hear from an invited speaker and from members of the public who've registered to testify. At the end of today's meeting, the record will close. I'll provide more detail about next steps at the conclusion of testimony. Before we begin the presentations, I'd like to declare that I do not own or rent property within the South Portland Historic District boundary. I would like to provide an opportunity for my fellow commissioners to disclose any conflicts of interest. Colleagues, any conflicts?
Thank you, Mayor. I do not own or rent any property under consideration today.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. And Commissioner Mapps?
I have no conflicts of interest here.
Very good. Commissioner Rubio?
I too have no conflicts of interest.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Commissioner Ryan?
And I'm in the same boat.
No conflicts of interest. Has any conflicts of interest to declare. The project is being brought to us by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So I invite Commissioner Rubio to give opening remarks and introduce our presenters. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm proud to introduce the South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines today. Council had an opportunity to learn a lot about our historic preservation land use regulations earlier this year through the Historic Resources Code project. Those code amendments went into effect March 1 and have already begun to show results. The historic design guidelines before us today build on the Historic Resources Code project by providing flexible land use approval criteria for one of our existing historic districts, South Portland. I'd like to thank staff from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Development Services for working with community members to prepare these new guidelines. I'd also like to thank the Historic Landmarks Commission for holding a hearing and recommending City Council adopt these guidelines. Finally, I want to thank those who served on the Community Advisory Group for this project. So I'll now turn it over to Patricia Diefendurfer and Brandon Spencer Hartle from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to present the proposal.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Mayor, Commissioners. Patricia Diefendurfer, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. BPS's Historic Resources team was last at City Council in January for adoption of the Historic Resources Code, as you heard, and those code amendments became effective March 1. The proposal before you today builds on those code changes by providing additional clarity and flexibility in one of our existing historic districts, South Portland. This project came about after numerous requests from the South Portland Neighborhood Association and the Historic Landmarks Commission to update the specific design guidelines that apply to the South Portland Historic District. Because design guidelines are an implementing tool of the zoning code, we worked closely with the Community Advisory Group and the Bureau of Development Services to arrive at the proposal before you today. And so I will now turn it over to our Historic Resources Program Manager, Brandon Spencer Hartle, to summarize the proposal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Brandon Spencer Hartle with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm here to provide a short presentation on the South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines. And to get things started, and I'll talk more in a moment, the South Portland Historic District is nestled between OHSU and the Willamette River, south of downtown. It's one of our smallest historic districts, containing about 250 properties. I do want to also thank our community advisory group, a member of whom I believe you'll hear from today, for their tireless effort working on this project over the course of a couple of years. The proposal before you today does two things. First, it repeals the 1980 Lair Hill Historic Conservation District Design Guidelines, which are the oldest set of historic district approval criteria in the city, and replaces those with the new South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines that represent today's best practices for design review approval criteria in the city, as well as expect designers of new buildings to integrate natural, cultural, and social history into their thinking around new development, alterations, and additions. To develop the proposal before you today, staff at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Bureau of Development Services work closely with a 9-member community advisory group. That community advisory group was comprised of area residents, two technical professionals, one at Walsh Construction and one as a sole practitioner architect, and two students, a Portland State University student and the University of Oregon graduate student. That nine-member community advisory group advised staff in the development of a proposed draft of these design guidelines, which was released in June for consideration by the Historic Landmarks Commission. Unlike most land use planning proposals that come before council from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, in the unique case of historic district design guidelines, it is the Historic Landmarks Commission that makes a recommendation to City Council, not the Planning and Sustainability Commission. The Historic Landmarks Commission held a public hearing in July where they heard from three members of the public about the proposed design guidelines. The Landmarks Commission made a couple of small technical amendments to the staff proposal. And on August 8th, 2022, the Landmarks Commission voted to make their formal recommendation to council to adopt the new design guidelines. And so the proposal before you is the Landmarks Commission's proposal. A little bit about the South Portland Historic District. Some of you may be unfamiliar with the historic district that's down here. People who live in South Portland and around the historic district and work in the historic district know a lot about it, but it's as one of our smallest historic districts, people out in the broader community may not be all that familiar. In 1977, City Council designated this area as a conservation district. It was our city's first conservation district and the first designated historic area outside of the downtown core. In 1998, that conservation district status was elevated to our more regulated historic district designation. That 1998 designation not only described the architectural history of the area, primarily Queen Anne and early commercial buildings, but especially the social and cultural history of South Portland, which was once a home for Eastern European immigrants in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Both the historic district nomination and the guideline document before you today describes the multi-ethnic and intersectional history of this area during the late 1800s and early 1900s, and also builds off the research of Kimberly Moreland, the Oregon Black Pioneers, and others by describing some of the enclaves of individual communities who live in this neighborhood through the middle of the 1900s. South Portland, as I think many of us know, was highly impacted by urban renewal, highway building, the development of the Ross Island Bridge, and racist lending practices. And so the 1920 to 1970 period saw a significant amount of demolition and displacement in and around the historic district. When council designated this area in 1977, it was the most intact remaining part of what was once a much larger neighborhood. A little bit of background on design guidelines. In historic districts, some development proposals are subject to a land use review called historic resource review. It's effectively design review for our historic places. When City Council adopted the Historic Resources Code project earlier this year, along with it came a long list of exemptions from that historic resource review. So today, many minor exterior alterations and routine repairs and maintenance to properties are not subject to that review. These would be things like adding solar panels, small ADUs, replacing certain windows, paint. And so there is a long list of development activities no longer subject to that review. However, when review is required in historic districts, design guidelines are the district-specific land use approval criteria that must be met to gain approval in historic resource review. Design guidelines, unlike a clear and objective standard, give designers of alterations, additions, and new construction flexibility in a variety of approaches of how to get to yes in the approval process. Applicants, the Bureau of Development Services staff, and the Historic Landmarks Commission are the typical users of design guidelines. So why are we before you today with an update to the South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines? In large part, it's because the existing 1980 design guidelines no longer meet our best practice. The 1980 guidelines neglect to address the multi-ethnic social and cultural history of the area. The 1980 guidelines don't represent modern best practice, giving applicants flexibility for different approaches for new development alterations. They've resulted in numerous implementation challenges for both the Bureau of Development Services and Historic Landmarks Commission. And importantly, the existing design guidelines restrict new development on sites where the zoning may allow for plexes, mixed use, and institutional buildings. The new design guidelines before you today include a lengthy background section that, unlike those 1980 design guidelines, provide context on the area's social and cultural history, provide 12 different design guidelines that address items related to parking and loading, to materials on the exterior of buildings. Unlike some of our other historic district design guidelines, these guidelines are style neutral, intended to allow designers a higher degree of flexibility, encouraging a range of new building types and alterations and additions. And importantly, these new guidelines address topics such as the public realm, tall new buildings, and natural, social, and cultural history, while de-emphasizing what's not visible from the immediate sidewalk adjacent to historic resources. Today's hearing, you'll hear testimony on the proposal, which again is two parts, repealing the existing Lehrer Hill Conservation District design guidelines and adopting new South Portland Historic District design guidelines in their place. What's not being proposed is any new historic districts, any expansion or reduction of the existing historic district, or changes to the types of development activities subject to review in this historic district. We are specifically looking at the approval criteria for development activities that are already subject to a historic review. So with that, that concludes my staff presentation. Thank you.
Very good, thank you. I appreciate how much work has gone into this proposal for the council's consideration. I also just want to acknowledge the hard work of the volunteers on the advisory committee. I know they've worked really hard on this as well. At this point, I'll take questions from my colleagues. Commissioner Hardesty had her hand up first. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you both for that very informative presentation. And I think you ended with that this will provide us an update so that we will be modeling best practices. When it comes to historic districts, we may have learned something over the years. And you talked about the cultural history from the past. So what are we preserving? And how does, and the short question is, how do we develop in a housing emergency crisis when there are specific design criteria in various portions of the city of Portland? We need housing. How do we get it with this designation?
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Patricia Diefendorfer for the record. So one of the things that we certainly recognizing that we need housing in the city and we want to make sure that we create all opportunities possible for that housing. This project actually reconciles a discrepancy between height limitations in the guidelines and height limitations in the code. The code is more permissive currently and the guidelines are more restrictive. With this, with the passage of these updated guidelines, it actually allows for the height that's allowed by the code to be achieved. It takes away that discrepancy and shows pathways or examples by which development can happen that is still in keeping with the character. So not limiting the height or reducing, you know, the amount of units, for example, you could have in a building, but showing how you can accomplish the heights that are allowed by the zoning. And still be compatible with the historic district and the surrounding character. So with that, that's, you know, how we, one aspect of it, and then I'll ask Brandon to speak a little bit to the cultural preservation.
Yeah, it's a great question, Commissioner. And to put a finer point on it with this specific historic district, what we heard loud and clear from our community advisory group was that this part of Portland in the past was bustling. It was multi-ethnic. It was multiple languages you'd hear on the sidewalk. There was activity. There was a range of housing types, but what this neighborhood was not was it was never the most expensive neighborhood in town. This was a neighborhood where working class people who worked largely on the river made their lives, made their sort of Portland experience possible. And what we don't see in the neighborhood today is that mix of uses, that density of residential housing types, those opportunities for small family-owned or community-owned businesses. And so what we wanted to do with the guidelines, in addition to what Patricia mentioned, to allow those larger new buildings that can fit within the zoning, is to provide that flexibility for adaptive reuse of existing buildings, provide opportunities for new mixed-use institutional buildings, and to not let our historic preservation program get in the way of allowing that dynamism to come back to the neighborhood. In the case of large buildings too, and we heard this from our community advisor group, we've learned it from the history, we wanted to provide extra flexibility for new buildings, larger new buildings, so multi-family buildings, commercial buildings, institutional buildings, to do something beyond the design of the building to tell that neighborhood story. And that's a little different for our historic district design guidelines that in the past were really just focused on design. In these guidelines for larger new buildings, we want to go a little further to give flexibility when there's community garden space, when the program of the building is affordable housing or immigrant supportive housing, when we have opportunities for daylighting a creek, giving more flexibility we might in a typical historic district to allow for not just architectural preservation, but think about, can we get some of that back in the neighborhood? We know it means more housing, more activities, and greater opportunities for affordable housing that exists today. So we heard that pretty loud and clear. We're stuck in the land use world a little bit with having a limited toolkit, but we wanted to provide that flexibility here. And if it works, hope to replicate that in some of our other districts where we've been too focused on just the architectural history and not looking at accommodating the preservation, or in this case, the restoration of history that was lost from displacement.
And are there any cultural sites that represented the community that used to be there that have been preserved and will continue to serve? Yes?
It's a great question, Commissioner. The neighborhood house is the first one that comes to my mind. The last photo in our slideshow was the groundbreaking of that building in 1910, which is a significant institution in Jewish history in our city. It is a landmark in its own right. It is one of the best last examples of a sort of institution in the neighborhood. That building has been used as a school for many years. It's still in community use. And providing that memory and wayfinding as a building is important, but I think we heard loud and clear from the community that it's not just about the physical landmarks, the monuments, but that there is a need for more housing here and a desire for more housing, and certainly an interest in allowing this neighborhood to become more what it once was.
Thank you. Commissioner Mapps.
First, I want to thank staff for this presentation and the larger work here for Portlanders who haven't been in this neighborhood. It's a charming hidden gem. Kind of building a little bit on Commissioner Hardesty's last question, I was wondering if staff could just tell us a little bit about the architecture that we find in this neighborhood and how this architecture helps tell the story of Portland.
Yeah, good question, Commissioner. I think I'll take that one. This neighborhood, historically, I think many people think of it as kind of a Queen Anne, Victorian neighborhood, old houses, old duplexes. There are a handful of those early streetcar mixed-use buildings. But when, in this project, the city staff, our community advisory group, Bureau Development Services, started to look at what was once there architecturally, with multi-story, single-occupancy housing units with a variety of building types, something that became pretty clear to the community advisory group and to the staff was that while there are some interesting architectural styles, what this neighborhood really does is it shows the full spectrum of building types, houses, plexes, mixed-use buildings, institutional buildings. So moving away with these guidelines from a pure architectural style approach, which is historically how we've managed our historic districts about architectural style, and moving to a place where we recognize that this was once home to duplexes and fourplexes and eightplexes, and how can designers reintroduce those building types in this district with some stylistic freedom, but also ensuring that those building types do sort of work harmoniously and continue to build on the story, that we're not just preserving it as it is today, but that we're allowing for those types to come back. And so what that looks like is largely buildings that have sort of a simple exterior presentation, not asking for all the architectural bells and whistles whenever new duplex or quadplex is proposed, giving that flexibility, recognizing that these were homes and apartments rented by working class people, and not expecting new development to adhere to a standard that wouldn't have been appropriate historically and might not be today. And so the guidelines do detail those four building types and the variety of sort of architectural approaches one could take.
Great, thank you very much. I have no further questions.
Very good, thank you. So we'll move on to hearing testimony on the proposal. First, we have some invited testifiers, is my understanding. Then we'll open it up to those who've registered to provide verbal testimony on this item. I'd like to invite Kristen Miner, who is chair of the city's Historic Landmarks Commission, to share their testimony. Kristen, welcome.
Okay, good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and city councilors. It's great to see City Hall again, actually. I wish I was there, but thank you for offering a good model for a hybrid system. That's great. We're moving into that. I'm Kristen Miner. I'm chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, and I am here today to provide you with our recommendation on the adoption of these new updated design guidelines for the South Portland Historic District. Our commission isn't typically the recommending body for legislative projects, but adoption of design guidelines for existing historic districts is certainly one of those situations. So I'd like to speak very broadly for just a minute about guidelines, and then more specifically about these new set of guidelines for South Portland Historic District. Guidelines really make most important facts and characteristics of a place accessible to all. Instead of saying to a contractor or a property owner or developer, you know, go study the neighborhood, read up on its history, and then come back with something that fits, guidelines are really like the cliff notes almost for all of that. So they give people, including city staff who are trying to provide regulation on this, a much easier way to focus on the critical design considerations for that area. So I encourage you all to consider funding new historic design guidelines in other areas of Portland that don't necessarily have them, and especially in conservation districts, because it's really what I see as part of good governance. In other words, of helping people navigate the system. So moving on to the new set of South Portland Historic District Design Guidelines, I just want to highlight a few things about these guidelines. One of them is really to just give thanks to the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for taking on the project. As Brandon mentioned, it's been a confusing area. There's a overlapping conservation district and design or a historic district. And then, as Brandon mentioned, the guidelines themselves are so old, written in 1980, and the area has changed quite a bit. Let's see, number two, I'd like to give appreciation to the community engagement process for these guidelines. And the consultants and the city really did a fine job with outreach. And then finally, number three, these guidelines provide as much background as they could really fit into this project, as much as could be researched about the people that lived in these neighborhoods. So a real mix of cultures and identities that were left out of the previous guidelines. And knowing that history is now much easier just because people can look at these design guidelines and they don't have to go to the library or Oregon Historical Society to learn about it. The Landmarks Commission asked for a very few amendments, minor things such as the addition of a map and a few changes to language and images. We did hear some testimony requesting a more definitive line on height, and we had good discussion about it. Ultimately, the guideline text that the Landmarks Commission supported relies on a general perception of height rather than putting a number in the guidelines. We believe this creates a lot more flexibility for everyone using the guidelines, and it is more form-based. So with that, I open it to any questions. We are asking for you to adopt the South Portland Design Guidelines. Thanks.
Thank you. We appreciate that, Madam Chair. And is there additional invited testimony on this item, Commissioner Rubio?
I will turn that over to Brandon to assess.
Shaking his head no. The answer is no. Is that okay? Great. So with that, we will move to public testimony. These individuals have signed up to speak for 3 minutes each. And Keelan, our council clerk, will call you in order.
Thank you, Mayor. First up, we have Fred Leeson.
Welcome, Fred.
Hi, my name is Fred Leeson. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of the Board of Directors of the Architectural Heritage Center. I strongly encourage your approval of these guidelines. We believe that they allow flexibility to retain the historic character of the neighborhood while still allowing opportunities for development and growth. We agree with Kristen Miner that we would encourage the city to pursue guidelines in historic districts that do not already have them, because they are helpful both to property owners and to developers. In South Portland, I think the development pressure, given the street patterns and the zoning, is all going to be for taller buildings in the district. In our written testimony to the city council, we have added a few more items that we think the staff might want to consider when they're looking at taller buildings, and not necessarily to include them in your discussion today, but we would encourage the staff to look at them to see if they are helpful as projects come in down the road. That's the end of my testimony. I appreciate your consideration and hope you will approve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Joshua Magnanimously. Doesn't look like they're here. Next, we have Valeria Tapia.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hi.
And we see you.
So yeah, thank you so much for council for being here today. My name is Valeria Tapia. I'm a second year student in the Portland Masters of Urban and Regional Studies program. I was also a contributing member on the Community Advisory Board for the South Portland Historic District Guidelines from 2019 to 2021. So even during the pandemic, our group was really focused on the development of this draft document. Today, I'm asking you to support the South Portland Historic District Guidelines document. The draft document I see in front of me today reflects years of hard work from our Community Advisory Board and that of the consultants and city staff. I truly support the draft document. As mentioned, South Portland is a special place that was once an immigrant community. Our group consistently throughout the process highlighted the dark past of the neighborhood and the displacement, redevelopment, and urban renewal and the building freeway era that severed the community and displaced so many of the people that once inhabited the neighborhood. The area really speaks to me as a daughter of immigrants and someone who grew up close to the neighborhood. And as we process through identifying the building typologies, district patterns, and what made the public realm in the neighborhood special, as well as how alterations and new developments would kind of fit into the neighborhood. Not only did we consider the past cultural makeup of the neighborhood, but also the present and the future. And our formulated guidelines reflect a means to embrace the history and the people of the neighborhood by celebrating the character of building types while being considerate of materials and limitations that can be financially out of reach for many individuals, incur costs to renters and owners. And we recognize that we are amidst a housing crisis. Hence, the guidelines support additions to contributing resources and non-contributing resources by inviting new development in the neighborhood that is sustainable and enhances the human experience, bringing in mixed income individuals, multi-generational families, and diverse people in the neighborhood. These guidelines should be implemented. They respect and embrace the roots of the neighborhood and the community and the vision for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to take a second and especially thank Valeria for her volunteer role on the community advisory group. She's a PSU student and a mother, Val made time over the last 3 years to participate in nearly every advisory group meeting connected to this. So I feel like that bears some acknowledgement and appreciation by this council. And also, as you've heard, her perspectives on community and affordability and her own experiences around culture and lived experience have directly informed a lot of the design guidelines included in this proposal. So I just wanted to say thank you, Valeria, to you for all your work and your commitment and all the advisory group as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It was a great experience. And again, I really hope that they get adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Council. Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Thank you, Valeria. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Maxim Mochan.
Welcome.
It doesn't look like they've joined us. And finally, Jim Gardner. Jim, you're muted. Jim, are you able to unmute?
I think I just did.
There. Yep, we hear you.
Okay, good.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'd like to testify strongly in support of adoption of these guidelines. I've been involved in this neighborhood for many years. Actually, I've lived here for about 46 years. And off and on, I've been active in the Neighborhood Association during much of that time. For about the last 10 years, I've been the chair of our Neighborhood Association's Land Use Committee. I've also, over the 46 years I've lived here, have seen many changes take place in this neighborhood. Most of those have been more evolutionary than sudden. Actually, I believe that's a very appropriate type of change for our National Historic District to undergo. As our land use chair, and even prior to that, I've been very familiar with the existing guidelines that were adopted in 1980. And I think for the past 40 years or so, they have worked very well. I do believe that these proposed new guidelines will continue to be effective. They could serve to help protect the historic character of the district, but at the same time, guide new development that can be appropriate, can be historically compatible, and that continue to help address today's needs that Portland faces. I'd like to especially express my thanks to Brandon Spencer Hartle and the other city staff who have worked so long on these guidelines, and as everyone involved with Portland and even the nation over the last 3 years knows, things did not always go as smoothly or as quickly as they might have done in other times. But the city staff stuck with this, and so did the community advisory group, which I also would like to thank. I was not technically a member of the group, but I did participate in all of their meetings and discussions. I also really want to express some thanks to Rick Michelson and Karen Carlson, who were the primary consultants who helped City Historic Resources staff develop these guidelines. Again, in summary, I do think that these guidelines are effective. I have some concerns about some of the ways they may allow buildings that would turn out to be not as compatible with the rest of the district as those that have developed in the past. But I also think that there needs to be some additional flexibility in guidelines like this. And I support the balancing that was done to balance flexibility versus protection of the historic resources. So I'd be happy to respond to any questions. And again, I very much support adoption of these guidelines.
Thank you, appreciate it. Commissioner Hardesty.
And thank you, Mayor. Could we have staff come back up again, please? So I guess I'm just a tad bit confused about how design guidelines work. Because I think what I'm hearing is that this is a suggestion about how growth would happen in this particular historic district. Is that correct?
Commissioner, I respond quickly and say it's more than a suggestion.
So say more about that, please.
In the context of a historic district, remember, we're not talking about like design districts. In the context of a historic district, the zoning map, the official zoning map, says what uses are allowed, what the height limits are. It tells us what's the allowed scale and use of development. And in a historic district, the overlay of the historic district protection says there are some additional things that have to be met. One, the historic buildings are required to come to council for a demolition review to gain approval. So it's a higher bar for demolition than if you were outside of a historic district. And two, many alterations, additions, and new construction that are the uses allowed and the height limit, you know, that's allowed in the zoning is required to sculpt or have physical features that meet the design guidelines. And so the design guidelines are mandatory approval criteria that the Bureau of Development Services implement that say, in the case of South Portland, for example, parking and loading need to be minimized to ensure the pedestrian experience is protected. So that's a higher bar for parking and loading that might exist on the other side of the street from the historic district.
Thank you. That is really very helpful. And so you started talking about the historic diversity that was in this community that has been displaced by gentrification and freeway expansion and all the fun ways we move people of color around in communities. How will this new update either address the historic wrong or actually make it better for folks who are displaced because of previous city plans and actions and exclusions? How will they benefit from this new designation?
Yeah, I think I'll jump with that one too. I don't know, Commissioner, as your city staff, I don't know that we can ever fully address the harm that was done in this neighborhood and elsewhere. But what we were mindful of with these guidelines and in the Historic Resource Code project update is that we try to provide as many opportunities as possible in all of our historic districts, but specifically today in South Portland, to enable new housing and new development, and specifically affordable housing and affordable housing development. Here we know was a neighborhood that oftentimes was home to people who were coming from overseas or who were coming from elsewhere in this country who had little to their name when they arrived here, and this was their first landing spot. And so we're doing a couple things. One, allowing new development to fill out that zoning envelope where today's guidelines say no taller than 3 stories. If we're talking about a regulated affordable housing building that triggers inclusionary housing, it will likely need that larger bulk to take advantage of the incentive. And then two, with regards to the Historic Resource Code project, new affordable housing developments go through a streamlined staff review effective March 1st from the Historic Resource Code project that allows staff to review, you know, regulated affordable housing through the lowest type 1X staff level review against the design guidelines. And so in this case, we're trying to make sure that when staff do get a proposal for regulated affordable housing, they have flexibility, there's not an artificial limitation on the size of that new building, and that specifically if that building is affordable housing, we give that extra flexibility for bringing back something to the neighborhood that was lost.
So wait, let me stop you. So when you say affordable housing, affordable for who?
We're talking about, I have to go to my math, but I believe we're talking about housing that's at the 60% median family income level or below.
That is good. But is median family income the right appropriate measurement when we say affordable? Shouldn't it be based on what people make for a living as compared to the size of their family? I'm just putting that out there. I don't know if you have an answer to that.
I have a different answer. Okay. That's okay, Commissioner. And the different answer is we really struggled in this process, and we struggle within all of our historic resource conversations about the limited toolbox available to us in the zoning code.
Yeah.
So the zoning code does a really good job regulating uses, does a good job regulating development, but what we haven't nailed is how do we specifically bring a healing approach to our historic districts with our regulations that would bring back, for example, the specific people who were displaced or the specific types of people. We have to we're working with what we've got with regards to our affordable housing provisions and trying to make sure that our guidelines are in support of those policy objectives. But I'll be the first to admit that in this district, we really struggled to find how do we make these design guidelines work well, knowing who was displaced, who lived here, who this neighborhood is important to.
Let me just say thank you for that. That is really helpful for me. But let me also say inclusionary zoning is not affordable housing. It is exempt for 15 years, which means that at any time the rent can go up. So the tools that we pretend we have that actually would control affordable housing, that is not working as intended. So I am concerned that anything new that goes up, there is no ability to either control the rent for 15 years, and there's certainly no ability to make sure that people aren't priced out after 15 years. So I think we are continuing to move bad policy forward and then telling ourselves that we're building housing that people can actually afford to live in. That's why I asked those questions yesterday. And this is really around housing. We had a housing work session yesterday. But again, if we're continuing to use the tools that have failed us miserably, then we'll continue to be failed miserably. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Colleagues, any further questions? Very good. Thank you.
Actually, just a real quick
one. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure. Commissioner Ryan. Well,
mostly, I just want to say thank you both, Patricia and Brandon. That was a great presentation. And because I oversee BDS, I just wanted to know what your engagement was like with the DRAC committee, by any chance. Did you connect with them on this?
Yeah, Patricia, I don't know if you want to field that. I might start. Maybe you could contextualize.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. Yeah.
We did provide notice to the DRAC through their project updates and provided a short summary at their October 2021 meeting. Because we weren't creating a new historic district, because we weren't adding any new development regulations, we were changing the approval criteria. We didn't have as much of a touch point with DRAC as we did with like the Historic Resource Code project or if we were creating a new district. We did. We do have the benefit of a DRAC member who's also on the Historic Landmarks Commission, so we do have some parity there. And then we also have the benefit, I think, that they're now a former DRAC member, but Michael Harrison, who was representing OHSU, was also engaged with the Neighborhood Association's review of these guidelines in the spring and wrote their neighborhood newsletter. So while our engagement wasn't as deep with DRAC as it might have been on a larger code project, we did have several touch points with their members.
I think I heard enough to know how much you were collaborating with BDS, and I appreciate that. I just also want to say that a lot of my friends in the Jewish community have their hearts are very connected to that part of town, because that's in fact where the first Jewish dissidents lived in the area. And so thank you for making this an important historic focus.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it. And I also want to thank everybody for their public testimony. We've heard from everyone who's signed up to testify. At this point, we will close oral testimony. At this time, we will also close written testimony. Unless I hear of any interest in potential amendments, and I don't see any at this particular moment, we will move this item to second reading. Commissioner Rubio, would you like to make any closing remarks before we wrap things up today?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I just want to thank Brandon and Patricia once again for your incredibly thoughtful and hard work on these guidelines. It's very evident in your work and your presentation today. It's really heartening to see also how BPS team and Landmarks Commission were able to work together and with the community to get this to the finish line in a manner that's in alignment with our housing goals. And also just want to thank all the folks that came out and took time to testify today and participate in the process. We really, really, really value your time, and it made for a better product. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. This item is continued to November 9th at 10:15. AM time certain. Thank you all. That concludes today's hearing, and the meeting is now adjourned.